Here, bullet. If a body is what you want, then here is bone and gristle and flesh. Here is the clavicle snapped wish, the aorta's open valves, the leap thought makes at the synaptic gap. Here is the adrenaline rush you crave, that inexorable flight, that insane puncture into heat and blood. And I dare you to finish what you've started. Because here, bullet, here is where I complete the word you bring hissing through the air. Here is where I moan the barrel's cold esophagus, triggering my tongue's explosives for the rifling I have inside of me. Each twist of the round spun deeper. Because here, bullet, here is where the world ends every time. I wrote that poem in February of 2004, and I folded it up and I put it in a plastic Ziploc bag. And I put it in my pocket, and I carried it there for the rest of the time that I was in Iraq. And it touches on something what Philip had mentioned, sort of that recognition of the fear of death. It would be like, if it was a 60-40 mix, it would be 60% recognition of the fear, and maybe 40% sort of like a taunt towards death. It's a bizarre thing. From my own work, if there was one poem that I would like you to take away from hearing it or reading the book, it would be the next poem. And that's because when we came back, there's a story I tell. I tell it everywhere I go. I hope you don't mind, but there was we were arrayed on a parade field, the entire brigade, and the colonel gave a speech. The friends and family were there in the bleachers. There were reporters, banners. It was a sunny day, several thousand soldiers on the field. And the colonel, as he gave his speech, he asked for a moment of silence while he listed those who did not come back with us. But he did not say the name of Bruce Miller, Private First Class Bruce Miller, who was in Second Squad Bravo Team, and I was in Third Squad Alpha Team. And to this day, I feel that erasure was because he didn't die what might be considered a soldier's death. And although I think hopefully in the poem you'll be able to see that he died very much what I would consider a soldier's death. And it's called Eulogy. It happens on a Monday at 11:20 a.m., as tower guards eat sandwiches and seagulls drift by on the Tigris River. Prisoners tilt their heads to the west, though burlap sacks and duct tape blind them. The sound reverberates down concertina coils the way piano wire thrums when given slack. And it happens like this. On a blue day of sun, when Private Miller pulls the trigger to take brass and fire into his mouth. Sound lifts the birds up off the water. A mongoose pauses under the orange trees. And nothing can stop it now, no matter what blur of motion surrounds him, no matter what voices crackle over the radio in static confusion, because if only for this moment, the earth is stilled, and Private Miller has found what low hush there is down in the eucalyptus shade there by the river. He was 23 and kind of a quiet kid, but a really sweet kid from what I knew. And, you mentioned also, Philip, there's a poem called 2,000 Pounds, and I'd like to read that. It's a little bit longer, so if you'll bear with me. The main setting of this is a traffic circle, which is a predominant feature in the roadways of Iraq. And that sort of inclusive sort of symbol seemed like the perfect place to sort of meditate or look at what happens when a roadside bomb goes off. Because like you, I could see, and like soldiers now, you can get on the internet over there, and you can see the headlines, you know, roadside bomb in Baquba, IED left by the roadside in Fallujah, Ramadi, whatever. And you'll see maybe a body count, a quick encapsulation of the event. But what's really happening in that moment? And this poem tries verse stanza by verse stanza to sort of, in a cinematic technique, kind of pan around that circle and see what might be happening. Oh, and also, it's 2,000 pounds it was published as, but I found out later that it was 800 pounds. So there's a correction, but I didn't know what to do, so my apologies. It begins simply with a fist, white-knuckled and tight, glossy with sweat, with two eyes and a rearview mirror watching for a convoy, the radio a soundtrack that adrenaline has pushed into silence, replacing it with a heartbeat, his thumb trembling over the button. A flight of gold, that's what Cephalon thinks as he lights a Miami, draws in the smoke, and waits in his taxi at the traffic circle. He thinks of summer 1974, lifting pitchforks of grain high in the air, the slow drift of it like the fall of Shafa's hair. And although it was decades ago, he still loves her, remembers her standing at the canebrake where the buffalo cooled shoulder deep in the water, pleased with the orange cups of flowers he brought her. And he regrets how so much can go wrong in a life, how easily the years slip by, light as grain, bright as the street's concussion of metal, traveling at the speed of sound to open him up in blood and shock, a man whose last thoughts are of love and wreckage, with no one there to whisper him gone. Sergeant Ledoux of the National Guard speaks but cannot hear the words coming out. And it's just as well his eardrums have ruptured because it lends the world a certain calm. Though the traffic circle is filled with people running in panic, their legs a blur like horses in a carousel, turning and turning the way the tires spin on the Humvee flipped to its side, the gunner's hatch he was thrown from, a mystery to him now, a dark hole in metal the color of sand. And if he could, he would crawl back inside of it. And though his fingertips scratch at the asphalt, he hasn't the strength to move. Shrapnel has torn into his ribcage, and he will bleed to death in minutes. But he finds himself surrounded by a strange beauty, the shine of light on the broken. A woman's hand touching his face, tenderly the way his wife might, amazed to find a wedding ring on his crushed hand, the bright gold sinking in flesh, going to bone. Rashid passes the bridal shop on a bicycle, with Sefa beside him. And just before the air ruckles and breaks, he glimpses the sidewalk reflections in the storefront glass, men and women walking and talking or not, an instant of clarity, just before each of them shatters under the detonation's wave, as if even the idea of them were being completely destroyed, stripped of form, the blast tearing into the mannequins who stood as though husband and wife a moment before, who cannot touch one another, who cannot kiss, who now lie together in glass and debris, holding one another in their half-armed embrace, calling this love, if this is all there will ever be. The civil affairs officer, Lieutenant Jackson, stares at his missing hands, which make no sense to him, no sense at all, to wave these absurd stumps held in the air where just a moment before he'd blown bubbles out the Humvee window, his left hand holding the bottle, his right hand dipping the plastic ring in soap. Filling the air behind them with floating spheres like the oxygen trails of deep ocean divers. Something for the children, something beautiful. Translucent globes with their iridescent skins drifting on vehicle exhaust and the breeze that might lift one day over the Zagros Mountains. That kind of hope. Small globes which may have astonished someone on the sidewalk 7 minutes before Lieutenant Jackson blacks out from blood loss and shock, with no one there to bandage the wounds that would carry him all the way home. Nearby, an old woman cradles her grandson, whispering, rocking him on her knees as though singing him to sleep, her hands wet with their blood. Her black dress soaked in it as her legs give out and she buckles with him to the ground. If you'd asked her 40 years earlier if she could see herself, an old woman begging by the roadside for money, here, with a bomb exploding at the market among all these people, she'd have said, to have your heart broken one last time before dying, to kiss a child given sight of a life he could never live, it's impossible. This isn't the way we die. And the man who triggered the button, who may have invoked the prophet's name or not, he is obliterated at the epicenter. He is everywhere. He is of all things. His touch is the air taken in, the blast and the wave, the electricity of shock. His is the sound the heart makes quick in the panic's rush, the surge of blood searching for light and color. That sound the martyr cries, filled with the word his soul is made of, Inshallah! But still hanging in the air over Asher Square, the telephone line snapped in two, crackling a strange incantation the dead hear as they wander confused amongst one another, learning each other's names, trying to comfort the living in their grief, to console those who cannot accept such random pain, speaking Habib softly, one to another there in the rubble and debris, Habib over and over, that it might not be forgotten. And Habib is the word for love, right? So, I heard a beep go off. Is that my time? Am I
canceled? You're doing great.
Canceled? Cut?
Gotcha.
Okay. I'll try and mix it up. I'll read a different one. This thing seems kind of low or something. It's like I'm down here trying to read you guys. This one's called Last Night's Dream. It's for Ishtar. In the dream, her breasts become confused in my lips. I shoot an azimuth to her navel while her fingertips touch me with concussions, as if explosives rang through the nerves of my body, as if I am strung with wire, a huge receiver of UHF radio transmissions, frequency hopping with our tongues as we kiss, and I slide into her with a sound of flashbang grenades that make her eyes cloud over in smoke from the heat of it. In the dream, she kisses Arabic into my skin, and I understand every word of it. I transcribe it backwards into cuneiform and stone. I rename the arteries and veins for every river and wadi from Dilhook north to Basra south. I feel for this geography of pleasure. My tongue is a marker that writes even in the rain, even in salt and sweat, and I write with it now over every curve and turn of her body. In the dream, our orgasm destroys a nation. It leaves thermite and gunpowder in the air above us, a crackling of radio static as we kiss on, long into the denouement of skin and fire, where medevac helicopters fly in the dark caverns of our lungs in search of the wounded, and we breathe them one to another, a deep rotor wash of pain and bandages. And I would like to read one last poem, but before I say that, just to give you an idea, I was in the military for about 7 years. I served in Bosnia and in 99 to 2000, and then from 2003 to 2004, the unit that I was in was in Iraq, and we crossed the border into Iraq on the 3rd of December 2003, and we convoyed up just past Baghdad to a small town called Balad, just south of the Tigris River, and we worked there for a few months, moved up to Mosul, we were there for a few months, in the center of the year of 2004, not in the center, the April, I believe it was, there was a spike in violence, and many of the roadways and bridges were cut in the middle of the country, which basically cut off the supply route north and south. So we were, my company was formed into a task force with other companies. We were sent south, and we lived north and south of the city of Baghdad for a couple of months. And then once we were relieved of that mission, we went back up to Mosul. So that's kind of a brief skeletal outline of the time that I was there. And unfortunately, that kind of year under those types of circumstances don't allow the kind of like learning that I wanted to learn while I was there. Do you know what I mean? Because it's a fascinating country with amazing people. And this book just barely scratches the surface of that. But I'll read one poem that tries to get towards that. It's called Mihrab, which from my understanding means the gateway to paradise. They say the Garden of Eden blossomed here long ago, and this is all that remains. Wind scorpions and dust, crow-like jays cawing their raspy throats in memory of a song. A ghost of beauty lingering in the shadows fall. Let me lie here and dream of a better life. Let what beauty there is be lifted up and given to the greater world as I listen to the mouths of termites eating of the earth, their bodies drumming a rhythm in the soil, undaunted in their blindness. By the millions raising a skylined architecture, the blood moon must recognize with light. Let me stay here with these birds and listen to their rough songs. If I say the desert is an afterimage, that birds serenade us, that the moon is the heart of God shining in heaven, that if there is a heaven, it is so deep within us we are overgrown, that the day brings only a stripping of leaves, and by sundown we are exhausted, then let it be. Because if there is a definition in the absence of light, and if a ghost can wander a maze through the days of its life, then it is me. Here in the Garden of Eden, where it is impossible to let go of what we love and what we've lost. Here, where the breath of God is our own. Thank you very much.
And now, Dunya Mikhail.